welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's Tech Tuesday time. Cyber Monday was on course to set another record for retail sales yesterday as the strong start to the holiday season continued online. Today on Tech Tuesday, we'll talk about scoring the best deals online and using social media to do the same at the store in your neighborhood. Joining us to talk about that is our regular social media commentator and co-founder of Mindset Digital, Betsy Hubbard. Welcome back, Betsy.
Thanks, Ann. Good to be here.
Also joining us is Nita Rollins. She's a digital business strategist for Resource Interactive. It's a Columbus-based digital marketing agency. She's co-author of The Open Brand, When Push Comes to Pull in a Web-Made World, one of the first business books to redefine branding in terms of the social web, currently being used by more than 20 Fortune 500 brands. Welcome to the show, Nita.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
For our listeners, did you shop on Black Friday and Cyber Monday? And how did you use social media to get the best deals? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can use social media to communicate with us as well. You can go to Facebook and the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can also tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU. For Nita, I have a question first. You're a digital business strategist advising companies how to make the best use of social media. What are some of the big trends, and how fast is retail changing in terms of social media?
Well, the biggest trend, and one we've been talking to our clients about for the past year, is what we call everywhere commerce. This is e-commerce on steroids. This is e-commerce with a capital E, because we began to notice the proliferation of what we call shopportunities, and they certainly aren't merely confined to the e-commerce site anymore. You can shop on Facebook, and we were, of course, one of the first innovators of F-commerce. But alongside F-commerce, we've seen the growth of T-commerce, which is tablet commerce, and the M-commerce, which is mobile commerce.
Now, you're talking about like Facebook commerce, though, which is one I most, is that the people trying to sell me shoes in the right hand column all the time? Is that what you're talking about?
No, okay. those are paid ads.
Okay.
You can click through those ads to the e-commerce site, but we're talking about, for the most part, and we think it's a superior experience to shop within Facebook, not to leave. We try to eliminate all friction in the shopping experience, or all speed bumps, so you can complete the transaction in Facebook. And this is exciting because this monetizes social media. And the big question that brands have pondered for the last several years is how to measure the effectiveness of their social media marketing. But if you talk about the direct monetization, that question answers itself, doesn't it? So we've been focused on what we think is everywhere commerce, is the ability to shop virtually anywhere and everywhere. And we recently did a study of 4,400 American consumers. It was our largest quantitative study, in I think, in the history of the firm. And what we learned was shocking in some respects, and wholly expected in others. The early adopter population, and these are the folks that are a bit more tech savvy than the general population, are generally out in front in terms of a willingness to shop anywhere, or even an awareness of the ability to shop in a video or in a display ad. But what we learned was that they're 50% more interested and can see themselves shopping in all of these various e-commerce contexts in 2012. The general population is interested in it too, and so we asked them what would be the enticements and what would be the obstacles to shopping in these various e-commerce contexts. And one of the surprising findings was that they were more open to shopping in a display ad and in video than they were in Facebook, because Facebook, as we know over the years, has experimented a bit with privacy and security. And these two, are areas of concern for shoppers. They, if you can demonstrate that their transaction is secure, there'll be no breach of privacy, then they're willing to try virtually any e-commerce context that you can put before them.
My guest, Nita Rollins, digital business strategist for Resource Interactive, and also with us, Betsy Hubbard, social media consultant and co-founder, Mindset Digital. For our listeners, did you use social media to shop over the shopping holiday, the few days after Thanksgiving, or not? Did you avail yourself of Cyber Monday? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, and let us know what your story is. So let's talk about what we saw this season as far as social media, the use of social media in shopping on Black Friday and on Cyber Monday. What do we know, Nita?
Well, we know that we're off to a very, very strong start. We're not sure how we'll finish the race, but according to some analysts, there's a 26% increase over shopping figures from last year for the Thanksgiving weekend. So beginning, as we know, beginning midnight on Thanksgiving and extending through the weekend, we're up 26%. We also know that Cyber Monday sales are up 18%, at least per one analyst firm, as of 6 p.m. yesterday. So this is a bit out of step with some of the media coverage of the consumer confidence index and some of those starker economic realities that we know are American consumers, not just American consumers, are dealing with. But nevertheless, they decided to spend primarily to take advantage of the deep discounts.
Right. And so is it possible, though, that they just won't spend otherwise or elsewhere?
Well, according to those that were surveyed, over 12% have finished their shopping. They're finished. So this.
Oh, I have words.
Yes.
But I just can't. So unfair.
Well, I do think that's because we have a very promotion-minded, price-sensitive consumer. Trying to take full advantage of the deep discounts offered in store and online, and they did it in droves, and they did it in ways in store that, of course, have created all sorts of media stories that aren't as uplifting as the straight e-commerce stories.
You mean the pepper spray incident, or
yes,
what?
some of the store pandemonium. yes,
and some people say Black Friday there's a social aspect to it too. And I'm wondering, is there any way that social media can replicate that experience?
Well, I think in many ways social media has contributed to it. How else would we have institutionalized the terms Black Friday and Cyber Monday if it were not for the digital channel popularizing the notion that these are the most important shopping days of the year? They aren't always, but they were introduced, at least Black Friday was, as recently as 2005. So what they have to do with pilgrims,
that's the question.
Is another question entirely. but I do think that the 18 to 34 set is excited about these store events, these openings at 3 and 4 and 5 a.m., Kmart and Sears, Target at midnight. It feels a little bit like a midnight movie. It feels like a social event that they want to participate in. I think sometimes the reality is quite different from their expectations. It's not always that much fun. And I do think that that though we've seen greater numbers of young people, and certainly more spending from the male shopper, which is a very surprising finding. One I find fascinating.
Online?
No. At the stores. Yes. Well, their combined sales outpaced the female shoppers significantly. The average spend was about $400 for the U.S. consumer over this Thanksgiving weekend, and men spent on average $480. They're out there in big numbers buying consumer, deeply discounted consumer
Sounds
electronics.
Like one of the seven
category.
Signs of the apocalypse or something.
Well, we've been waiting for the male shopper to show up for some time, and he has arrived.
Lured out by the big screen TV deals.
Yeah, that's right.
And electronics.
That's right. Video games, absolutely.
Yeah. Betsy Hubbard, what do you think are the most attractive deals that were out there? Not financially, but how the different stores and, well, whatever they are out there selling, that made it attractive and made it easy for people.
What I was struck by this year, just through observation, is how many efforts there were to extend this into a shopping season, a shopping weekend, you know, move this beyond the one moment in time. And part of that's safety reasons. You know, they're trying to get away from the open door at 5 a.m. and the trampling of the crowd. So you see kind of these staggered openings and deals that are staggered throughout the night. So it's not just a single point in time. But I also was struck this year that Cyber Monday is now, some people were billing it as a three-day event. So started on Sunday, you know, we have screen busters on Sunday and then on Monday, and here's the follow-up on Tuesday. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when Cyber Monday was really announced as a concept, part of the reason they pushed for Monday as the online shopping day is that a lot of people didn't have high-speed internet access at home. Hmm. So they were thinking, we will do this on a Monday when people are at work and they have better online access and it'll be easier for them to shop. But now, more and more people have good access available to them, or they can go to their local Starbucks and get on Wi-Fi, or, you know, people have lots of ways of getting access. And so I think you see a big push on retailers to broaden this and capture the consumer who might be in the store on Friday, might be sitting at home watching television searching for deals on Sunday, might also log in on Monday to get a time-specific deal. So lots of ways to try to reel people in and get them to participate in this.
Okay, so what about deals that you get online, but you have to go into the store to redeem? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that more common? Is that basically, I mean, is that, has that changed anything?
Well, what it's done is create a stronger synergy, if I can use that term, between offline and online. But it's closed the divide between the physical and the digital shopping environments. What you try to do is habituate consumers who are comfortable with offline shopping to the digital equivalent of that. So if you have coupon cutters, you know that a large part of your target audience are avid coupon clippers. You need to create comfort around the digital equivalent of that. And so you have to introduce it to them with a reward, and to do that you incentivize by various means. If you're offering a digital coupon that can only be redeemed in store, then they begin to sort of transition from the analog to the digital version of that last mile shopping decision support tool, the all important coupon. So yes, it's a very conscientious effort. And I'm thinking of Macy's as one of the retailers out in front in terms of trying to create habit, which is very, very important. Well, they, again, have thought about some of the analog shopping behaviors and created very comfortable, very accessible digital equivalents of that. They also are innovating in ways that just create excitement and buzz. They're innovating the shopping experience in store by adding digital layers. They have a magic mirror that basically is an experience that's both shoppable and shareable, because of course it's connected to Facebook, as all self-respecting shopping experiences should be, and it's filled with sort of recommendations for the complete ensemble. If you're shopping for a top, that you can use with a flick of your index and your thumb, you can take the item that you like. It's very hard to explain without visuals. Uh-huh. and sort of pinch it open and put it on the image of you in this magic mirror, and then watch a kind of parade of recommended apparel that might complement your choice. And so this is bringing digital into the fitting room, if you will, to make it more exciting, because really retail's always in search of a way to renew excitement when we know that a lot of people are worried about their, you know, controlling their household finances, that sort of thing. So Macy's has reaped big rewards from all of these innovations too. They're for the first time ever on Stores Magazine's list of the favorite shopping experiences, online shopping experiences. So, I would list them at the top among digital innovators. These are retailers who are figuring out how to make digital and physical work together better.
We're talking about social media and shopping. What a combination. So we will return to this conversation when we return. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
After the turkey and cranberries, Americans shopped more and spent more than ever. Macy's store manager Robert Booker looked on in surprise.
To have well over 500 people waiting to come in for our specials is something I've never seen in the 20-plus years I've been with the company.
I'm Neil Conan. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, a retail roundup. Plus, actor Alan Rickman, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 43 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. Temperatures falling this afternoon. Expect a rain-snow mix by tonight, becoming all snow after midnight. A low of 33 degrees. There's a chance of snow for Wednesday, gradually becoming mostly sunny and a high of 39. Clear skies Wednesday night and a low of 27 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday and a high of 46. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about using social media to get better deals at stores and also online shopping this holiday season. Still with us is social media consultant Betsy Hubbard and digital business strategist Nita Rollins. If you have a question or comment for them, want to get some tips on how to shop online and how to make the transfer to the real stores versus the virtual. I don't know if I'm using all the right lingo. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Betsy Hubbard?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wanted to follow up with what Nita was saying about trying to make the shopping experience more social, and that it goes to your point earlier that for many people, that's what they like about shopping. You can do it with your friends. You can do it with others. Social media really is trying to replicate that. As Nita was saying, any self-respecting online retailer is trying to tie social into this. And you're seeing that in a lot of ways. So partly, you do see that about 56% of people on Facebook have clicked through from a Facebook post to a website. Retailers are counting on that. So they want their shoppers to share their purchases on Facebook, and they're building that in more and more ways. Part of it is through the F-commerce. So for Express, they now have their whole catalog built into Facebook.
So if you like their Facebook page,
Yeah, you can go to their Facebook page and you have an option to look at one of their tabs, which is their catalog. And as Nita was saying, I can just buy an item. If I see a dress I like there, I get to purchase that without going to another website, without clicking off of Facebook. I can purchase it, do that transaction entirely while I'm in Facebook, which then makes it really easy for me to share with my friends, look at the dress I just bought. Now, that's what Limited wants you to do, because now you're promoting their goods, and people are more likely to make purchases if they've heard about it from their friends. So by building this whole shopping experience into Facebook, part of the benefit Limited is getting is kind of that, you know, virtual army of folks talking about and sharing their goods. So other people are trying to build this into their stores. If you've bought anything recently on Amazon, you may have noticed this. You know, once you make a purchase, there's a pop-up box saying, would you like to share this on Facebook, on Twitter, and you can click through. So Amazon, too, is trying to get you, you know, once you make a purchase on their site, to talk about it in social media.
Mm-hmm. What's the advantage, though, for the person to say, yeah, why would somebody share it?
Because you are sharing your personal preferences, and most people, at least of a certain age, are interested in what their social graph thinks and does and has read and experienced, and preference is a huge social influence, or what they call social proof, is a huge driver of sales. I was just going to add to Betsy's observation that the flip side of F-commerce is the fact that the like button, which is a Facebook plug-in, Facebook widget, one of the most powerful widgets ever invented in the history of e-commerce at any rate, when it debuted, it quickly alerted retailers to the power of bringing that social influence to their own e-commerce site. So when Levi's, which was early out of the gate in its adoption of this Facebook widget, put it on its side, it meant that you not only would be aware of what your girlfriend's taste in jeans are. She likes the boyfriend jeans. You might like them too. You might be inclined to shop a little faster with a less competitive sort of noise, if you will. But it populates the Facebook page and the Levi's page. So there were a lot of retailers who learned quite a bit from the Levi's case study, because the sales results were incredible, and the adoption of the like button by other retailers was swift and sure. And what's exciting is that they've begun to add to these social widgets. At their last F8 conference, which is where they always debut or unveil their exciting new innovations, they talked about adding new social verbs. So you could do more. If you think about it, just liking something is
you mean more things you can do.
Yes, more things you can indicate about your own preference, about your own purchase preference in
like,
particular.
Like what?
So they talked about the want button, adding a want button. Which is one step closer to closing the deal.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Like the wish list kind of things?
Well, the wants end up in a wish list. That's right, which is a kind of universal wish list because it's accessible to all your friends and family. So this makes for it just closes the gap between what social media used to do, which was just marketing, and closing the sale. We like to talk about the separation of church and state resource, and sales and marketing in most instances was had a kind of church and state divide, and you were either marketing, you were developing inspiring content, you were extending your digital footprint, so you were going to meet up with your consumer on his or her purchase journey one way or another, but the sale came at the end of all of this expenditure, and we're trying to help clients understand the paradigm shift, if I can use that hoary cliche, when you no longer have to separate those two. When you can e-commerce enable all of your digital touch points, everything can close a sale. And so it's very good for brands, of course, because if they're going to the expense and trouble to create inspiring videos, why don't they make them shoppable? But it's also good for the consumer because that delay, well, it's good because you get to act on impulse, which isn't always good, you know, if you're worried about your own fiscal responsibility. But nevertheless, if you really would like to act on inspiration at the moment of inspiration, it eliminates the delay. You can click the buy button, or at least something close to the buy button, which might be a store locator, or if you're using Red Laser, which is a mobile shopping app, a very, very popular mobile shopping app, which began as a mere barcode scanner, now has all sorts of bells and whistles. It lets you check for local inventory. It lets you pay with PayPal. You can complete your entire transaction on your mobile phone. If you're inspired from a barcode scan that says, yes, you do indeed have the lowest price here, you can complete the transaction at that moment without delay. So that's potent.
You're listening to Nita Rollins. She's a digital business strategist for Resource Interactive. Also with us, Betsy Hubbard, social media consultant, a regular contributor to the Tech Tuesday, and co-founder of Mindset Digital. We have an email from Vera, which raises a point I want to get at with all of this. She says, with all of the media attention, both local and national, paid to the holiday spending season, it would appear as if our sole purpose is to shop. It seems like more so now than ever, there is talk of Black Friday and Cyber Monday ad nauseum. It's as if the technology and social media we are so enamored with exists simply to reaffirm our identity as consumers and nothing more. I shop, therefore I am. So there are other people out there like Vera who are very turned off by all of this. How do you, I mean, this has to be a target audience too.
Yes.
No matter what, how do you make it so it's, what's the difference in looking for someone like Vera and getting them online to use this stuff and to employ it to the benefit of your clients, I imagine, and the 25-year-old who's already been buying online their entire conscious life?
Yes. Well, I share some of her concern about the erosion of family time. The incursions of e-commerce into the Thanksgiving holiday. But this is what you confront when you rely on consumer spending for 70% of your economy. We have a very, very efficient consumer economy. And the American super consumer is at the heart of this. And so how he or she shops is tied to our national economic well-being. But there are competing concerns now, competing interests. There's a growing number of consumers who use Good Guide, or there's actually a new site that's going to scrutinize the corporate social responsibility of fashion brands, and they will make their purchase decisions based on corporate responsibility, social responsibility records, the ranking that's available to any conscientious consumer.
It's called Goodbye.
Good Guide.
Good Guide.
Which has a mobile version, so you can actually check on the go. And Fashioning Change is a very new startup. I actually posted a comment, and the CEO replied late last night because I was studying her business model to see how viable it was, to see if it would actually work for consumers who are fashion conscious, as I am, but would like to have a better sense of who is an environmental offender and who isn't. And so we have to become more conscious about our consumerism. And if we can learn that some of these discounts might not be as deep but will be extended through the holiday season, we might choose to avoid those hours that are incursions into family time. We might just elect. Not everyone can, though. Not everyone can afford that, and that's what has been demonstrated starkly this weekend. There are two types of shoppers. There's the convenience shopper who uses a tablet app, and those shoppers are very serious. They shop more frequently and they spend more money. And the tablet hasn't even been around. The iPad hasn't even been around that long. And then there are the price conscious shoppers, the ones that have to wait in line at Walmart to get the only gift that might be on their child's Christmas list that year. And so there's not always choice, but I would think that as American consumers, we need to vocalize what's important to us to retailers and to global brands so that we can shape this phenomenon that will
to do good.
Yes, that's right.
This year, too, and this is certainly still in line with consumerism, but it's trying to get people to think about where they're spending their dollars. This is the first year I've really ever heard about Small Business Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's existed prior to this year or there's just more buzz about it this year. But, you know, that was a bigger effort to get people to think about where are you spending your dollars and encourage people to spend some of their dollars locally supporting small businesses, which are, you know, a vital part of our local economies. So I think you can see some efforts to challenge, you know, let's not just go after the big box deals or the online deals, but think wisely about how your dollars can be invested closer to home.
When we, you know, I did a survey on Facebook over the weekend, and there were several people who mentioned the Small Business Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That and I had not heard of it in that sense either. I didn't know what it was.
I think from, again, early indications are for many businesses that was a good success and that we will be hearing more about that in coming years.
Well, I think it will become part of our vernacular just as Cyber Monday has.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best initiatives American Express has undertaken, without a doubt. And if nothing else, it alerts people. Again, it makes it more conscious of their purchase decisions because you can contribute to your local tax base in a way that you can't, obviously, online.
Which brings me to Terry in Columbus. Terry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, actually, on Small Business Saturday, I was talking with a friend of mine. If I could ask before my question or comment before
okay.
my question, is that it was really a coup for American Express because American Express has a tradition of charging higher fees and may inhibit small businesses, but in fact may engender goodwill to the very industry that they're trying to make some headway in.
It has to be a win-win, though, right? I mean, it's capitalism.
Yeah. But my question was how impactful you think these websites are that do not have brick and mortar versus websites that have a brick and mortar and must charge sales tax.
Well, that's an interesting question because the results for the Thanksgiving weekend are in, and Amazon did the most sales. Perhaps that's not surprising to many, but to those who are offline shoppers, it might be. But Amazon has inched ahead of Walmart. Walmart's second. Macy's is Target, Best Buy. I can't remember all five, but I do remember that at least three of the five were brick and click. In other words, they were multi-channel retailers. And so I think that there is a way to compete even with your very substantial real estate overhead, your fixed costs. It's highly competitive, but knowing that that most shoppers are now multi-channel shoppers, they shop in-store, they shop online, they shop on their tablet, they shop on their smartphone, and occasionally they shop on their feature phone through SMS, et cetera, this is good for retailers because there are more ways to take care of those consumers, again,
sure.
at any juncture, along their purchase journey.
Yeah, I guess the reason for my question was, is a friend of mine was looking for a piece of electronic equipment, same price on a brick-and-mortar website, same price on a non-brick-and-mortar, both offered free shipping. And I'm like, well, you order from the non-brick-and-mortar website, specifically Amazon, because you don't have to pay sales tax.
Hmm.
So it has to give them a competitive
Well, we're
advantage.
Supposed to declare our online purchases,
oh, yeah.
aren't we? Yes. So I'm not so sure how long that will last, how long it will just be a matter of trusting the consumer to disclose
right.
at the end of the year. Come tax
and not
on.
Even a matter of trust. They just don't even think about it.
Right.
It doesn't even occur to them. But, we put a man on the moon, to use the old thing. We've done a lot of other stuff since then. But why can't they handle the tax issue online? Is it a dumb question or?
No, it's not dumb. I think
because
it's coming.
They plead
I think that the solution is
no can do. It's impossible.
It's not. It's not. It's not impossible. There are all sorts of online checkout that can even estimate your precise tax based on your zip code.
Right.
They'll give you an estimate so that you can make a determination as to whether you want to proceed with your e-commerce purchase or go to the store or maybe secure it online and pick up in store, which is another great way to shop.
Or shop early and get the free shipping. So,
They actually asked retailers how many intended to offer free shipping. Again, as Betsy was pointing out, some of this was confined to a single day, a half a day, and now it extends almost to the entire holiday season. But over 92% of retailers are offering free shipping. It's
Nita Rollins, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delight.
Thanks for having me.
Nita Rollins, she's a digital business strategist for Resource Interactive. And Terry, thanks a lot for that call, by the way. Appreciate it. And also Betsy Hubbard, social media consultant and co-founder of Mindset Digital. Thanks for joining us again, Betsy, as usual.
Sure, Ann.
Coming up, we're going to talk about the cloud some more and other stuff with Russell Holley of Geek.com. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
U.S. troops will be out of Iraq by Christmas. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tim Arango, Baghdad bureau chief for the New York Times, about the future of Iraq and about some of his experiences reporting from there. He used to be at the Times media desk and was featured in the documentary Page One. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 until noon for a discussion of the U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq and also U.S. troops returning from Iraq. How will they adjust to civilian life? That's on All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow from 10 until noon on 89.7. And on Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., WOSU will no longer broadcast on 820 a.m. Tune to 89.7 FM to hear your favorite programs like Morning Edition, All Sides with Ann Fisher, All Things Considered, and more. Listen to 89.7 NPR News. Temperatures falling this afternoon. It's 43 degrees in downtown Columbus. A rain-snow mix is likely tonight, becoming all snow after 2 a.m., a low of 33 degrees. There's a chance of snow for Wednesday, then sunny in the afternoon and a high near 40. Clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 27. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
So Cyber Monday broke records for consumer spending yesterday, with spending on electronics taking a major share of that. Today on Tech Tuesday, how to spend your money wisely on a cloud-based device or services. We take a look at the Google Chromebook and Apple's new iCloud service and the Wyze Pocket Cloud Remote Computing Service. Joining us again is Geek.com tech blogger Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
It's great to be back, Ann. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Did you have a happy holiday shopping online?
Well, I did some shopping online, but truth be told, holidays, I try to be as disconnected from electronic things as possible.
Right. So let's get back to it, though. It's Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Back to work. The Google Chromebook. Let's start with that. What is it? What's the pros and the cons?
Well, the idea behind the Chromebook is something that's not necessarily a new concept, but it's a new take on it. The idea was basically, so many people are, you know, when they turn on their computers, the first thing and the last thing and just about all the things in between that they're doing are actually on the web browser. Very few people find interacting with the desktop, the antivirus software, and, you know, updating their computer and all that stuff to be really kind of tedious stuff. And when it gets ignored, we run into, you know, viruses and, you know, other, you know, really just kind of unpleasant experiences with the computer. If we could just focus on being able to open up our laptop and be immediately put on the web to do the things that we wanted to do, and then when we close the lid, everything is already updated and everything's already done, then that would just be amazing. And that was the idea behind Chromebooks.
So what exactly do they do?
When you they are an access point to the Google Chrome web browser, which is very similar to just about any other web browser out there. It's very functional, and you know it's not difficult to use if you've never used it before. You can use Chrome on any operating system. They work on Linux, Mac, Windows, but this is just the web browser, and it's a hard concept to really digest because there is no desktop, there is no start menu, there is no control panel, there is no antivirus software. It is just the web browser in its most secure form, and it exists in hardware that is not entirely unlike Ultrabooks. I know that you talked recently about Ultrabooks.
Right.
And the form factor is very similar. It's very thin. There's not a whole lot of bells and whistles. There's, you know, a single USB port on the side, your SD card slot if you want to put pictures in, and the end result is you have a device that you can take with you anywhere. It gives you access to the web. It gives you access to the browser and has, you know, battery life anywhere from, you know, 7 to 9 hours to get you through a day without even needing to bring your power cord.
So what you're not doing is you're not going and using, say, Word. You're going to use Google Docs instead.
You'd use any online word processing system. You know, Google Docs is an option. There are several out there. But, yeah, any web-based system, if you want to do, you know, your Word editing, that would be available if you want to do. I mean, almost everyone uses a web browser for email now. There are less and less people every day that are using Outlook and Outlook Express and similar programs. And even Outlook has a web-based protocol now. So it's just the web browser. And they took this concept. You know, Ultrabooks, as you guys covered last week, I believe, you know, they get up to be right around, you know, $1,000, $1,300. Chromebooks start right now at around $299.
Why are they so cheap?
Because they don't have a lot.
Inexpensive. Let me rephrase that. Why are they so inexpensive?
Yeah, I mean, the inexpensive comes from, you know, a collaboration of the manufacturers who have, you know, done their best to put inexpensive parts in them. But also, if you're just running the web, even if you're doing intense things on the web, like watching movies and stuff, you don't need nearly as much to power that as you would a complete operating system. So it doesn't have to be, you know, the fastest processor and the most RAM and the most storage. It can be pretty minimal hardware to give you that same experience.
What about games and that sort of thing?
There are so many games that exist online, and a lot of PC games, you know, you wouldn't play on this kind of environment. But if you were to go to any website that had games, Facebook games, for example, or the games that exist within Google Plus, you know, or just any you know, interactive online game, all of that works exactly the same way. And actually, as part of the Chromebook experience, Google opened what they call the Google Web Store, where game developers and application developers really can publish what are basically web apps to this marketplace for people to access and use the same way that they would on a computer or even on their phone.
My guest is Russell Holley. He's a tech blogger for Geek.com. He's our regular commentator on Tech Tuesday. If you have a question or comment for him, we're talking about the Google Chromebook. And also we'll be talking about the iCloud service and Wyze Pocket Cloud remote computing service. If you have a question or comment about those, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And really, if you have any question for Russell about some kind of gadgetry that you're interested in for the holidays, for a gift or something, you know, he will, you know, he's there for you. You can call us and ask us about anything, but what we're talking about right now is the Chromebook. So how does it compare to the Ultra physically in terms of lightweight, keyboard, that kind of stuff?
There are a couple of different manufacturers right now. Samsung makes what they call the Series 5 Chromebook, and Acer makes one as well. And both of them are, you know, they're under 2 pounds. They're made of, you know, really light but pretty durable feeling plastic. I know I've dropped mine a couple of times and not had any, you know, any damage done to the device at all. They're not made so much of the, you know, you see like the MacBook Air, it's got that polished aluminum, mm-hmm. and Samsung actually has the Series 9, which is, you know, made of a denser material. It has a very light feel to it. It's very light, you know, almost plasticky sensation to it, but it stays under, you know, 12 inches as far as screen size. So you can put it in really just any kind of bag and just leave, you know, your entire office would essentially be, you know, in this one little device.
Okay, so it can't play DVDs or anything like that, right?
It doesn't have any optical storage, you know, like the Ultrabooks as well. You know, they don't have any of the optical storage accessories. But mm-hmm. anything that you have, you know, in any videos that you have online that you've gotten through Netflix or anything like that, you can watch right on the Chromebook.
And so I guess whether or not it can work as your main computer, what kind of questions should you ask yourself in that case?
Well, the problems that you run into anytime you have any kind of computer like this with your main computer, if you're going to use it at home, you run into problems like your printer. You know, you only have the one USB port on this device, so if you were to use it as your be-all, end-all machine, you'd end up unplugging, you know, things and plugging them in. A lot of people don't care for the trackpad, so when they're at home, They have a mouse that they plug in to use, and mm-hmm. all of those things work.
Oh, okay.
But you're limited by that single USB port. So, you know, you can get a USB extender, and by that point, you know, you've got 15 cables running across your desk, and things are a little chaotic. This, you know, for $299, this is a really great assistant device. You know, if you have your office computer or your home computer, and you need something that is not terribly powerful but gives you access to all your, you know, all your information while you are out and about, then that's really what this is perfect for.
So do you think that's at a good price point for a Christmas gift at this point?
I think $299 is a great price point for this, and they actually have a couple of models that are a little more expensive that actually include air cards from Verizon Wireless that will allow you to, you know, surf the Internet without being connected to a Wi-Fi network or something like that.
Again, folks, guest is Russell Holley, tech blogger for Geek.com, 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call if you have a question. So let's talk about iCloud services. Apple's new iCloud service. What do they do?
Well, a lot of these companies are trying right now to make it so that your documents, your photos, your music, all of this stuff is available anywhere so that as long as you have a login, you can access that information. And Apple's attempt into this domain is the iCloud. And what iCloud allows you to do is any service that you have on your iPhone, your iPad, or on your Mac that you are using, you know, for documents, for photos, for, you know, music, that information can be stored in your own personal iCloud that's bound by your login and can only be accessed by someone who has your username and password, you know, to gain access to that information.
Well, so, okay, it still feels, you know, insecure. It's just out there. Who has it?
It's not so much out there. You know, you use a service like Dropbox. Dropbox is a public service that lots of people have access to. You're limited pretty specifically here in that you have to have, you know, an Apple device, and you have to have your login credentials and be able to access that service. And the service is secure within Apple. You know, Apple is the manufacturer of the service. They are the maintainers of the service. Everything there is completely controlled by them.
Who shouldn't think about doing? I mean, what is this not good for? Because it sounds like good for everything. Are you saying it's maybe somebody who's going to be using a printer that's at home office kind of situation it's not good for because of the USB outlets? But by the way, why just one? How much does it cost to add two or three?
Two or three.
You know, so you can hook up your phone or your printer and your mouse and.
Like I said, they make USB expanders that, you know, you can connect. They're pretty inexpensive. You just run into, you know, cable management at that point, really. You can connect as many devices as your USB, as that single USB port is capable of powering and receiving information from. But, The problem that you really run into when you try and do these kind of things is making sure that your home computing experience isn't limited by having to unplug and plug things in, essentially. And that becomes, you know, this would be great for someone who has, you know, the home computing setup already made, you know, something as an addition so that they can access that information. If you're at a friend's house and, you know, you want to show off pictures, but you don't always have all of your pictures stored with you. Your photo album is easily accessible, you know, behind a login or on your phone, and you don't have to take up storage. Everything, you know, takes up space, and especially with things like smartphones and laptops, there's a pretty set amount of space, and you can't store everything on all of these devices, you know, at the same time. This gives you the ability to store everything in one location and just reach it from all of those devices.
Okay, maybe you talked about this, but iCloud is free, but it does require certain operating systems or versions of operating systems.
You do have to have the more up-to-date versions of the iPhone software, you know, iOS 5, in order to access the iCloud service. And most Apple machines, most Apple desktops and laptops that have been, you know, bought in the last, you know, two or three years should be able to access the iCloud service with no problem.
So what's the – is it Wyze Pocket Cloud?
It's either Wyze or Wyze. I actually get two different names depending on who I talk to from that company.
So but, what's that?
The Pocket Cloud service is more for someone who is an office traveler, someone who has, you know, a more expensive computer at home or a more expensive computer in the office, and it's a powerful machine that has that does a lot of work, you know, for them, word processing or video editing or, you know, photo manipulation, something like that. What Pocket Cloud allows them to do is access that machine remotely without losing any of the experience that you would get from sitting at your desk. So essentially, when you connect to one computer, you know, over a network from another computer, there's an anticipation, a lag involved, you know, where it moves back and forth and it's kind of slow. The Pocket Cloud service actually utilizes the powers of cloud computing to speed that up so that there's less lag, so that you actually feel like you're sitting in front of your computer moving your mouse around.
Okay, Jacqueline sent an email and wanted to know how heavy the Chromebook is. You said about 2 pounds?
They're all under 2 pounds.
Under
Some
2 pounds.
Some of them are a little tiny bit more than others. You know, the Samsung one, I think, is about 1.5 pounds.
An email from Chris asks, Russell mentioned that the Chromebook was without any kind of antivirus. Is this something I should be concerned about with malware and viruses becoming more and more of a problem these days?
Actually, one of the interesting things about the Chrome web browser is that it is the only web browser on the market right now that has not been broken into by security researchers. Google actually created a challenge where they offered a large sum of money for people to try and break in and infect the Chrome web browser, and that actually hasn't happened yet. So not having a virus, not having virus of any kind, there's no way for you to get malware or anything like that on a Chromebook.
Charles from Pickerington wanted to know if DragonSpeak could be used on a Chromebook. First, tell us what DragonSpeak is.
Dragon, naturally speaking, is software made by Nuance, and it's actually voice recognition software. Mm-hmm. And the answer to that is both yes and no. Nuance has actually worked with Google very closely recently to incorporate voice-to-text translation in a lot of their environment throughout Chrome so that you can actually do voice-to-text. It's not everywhere, and it's really kind of imperfect right now. It's not as good as a proper copy of Dragon, naturally speaking, but it does actually exist, and it's improving pretty consistently.
So the Weiss or Weissy or whatever Pocket Cloud remote computing service, what does that cost?
Well, it varies based on what device you want to use it on, but essentially you're looking at about $10 for an application if you want to get it on your iPad or your iPhone, or if you want to operate from another computer. They have pricing set up depending on what device you want to use, but you're basically looking at around $10 to $15.
Okay. So, Russell, Holly, we just have about a minute left, but I was wondering, what are you looking out there? What are some of the best Christmas? I ask you this every week. What's out there? What are some really great buys for Christmas this year?
I still think that if anyone who's interested in you know, video games of any kind, mm-hmm. the Xbox 360 Kinect is $99 right now, mm-hmm. and it really is a family environment. I mean, anybody could really enjoy using the Kinect on an Xbox 360. So if you have somebody who already has one, I would definitely look into getting that as an upgrade for them.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great news. Russell, Holly, thanks again.
Anytime.
Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.